You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And this is Dr. Michelle Cohen with you here live on LA Talk Radio. As I always am, 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time. Welcome to my couch. Nice to have you with me. As always, we have a terrific, interesting subject today, and as always, a fascinating guest is going to help us out with certain decisions about our lives. You know, I think one of the most common things I hear from individuals who are in a marriage or, you know, partners in a relationship of some kind is, how do I know if this is a bad relationship? How do I know? How can I determine? I mean, I don't feel good a lot of the times. We argue a lot about many things, many biggies, finances, religion, children. We argue about our moral belief systems. We argue about so many things, but then we make up and it's okay. But I would say about maybe 60% of the time, it's always an issue. I'm always feeling uncomfortable inside. How do I know if it's really time to leave the relationship? How do I know? What are some of the signs? Well, we're going to find out today because my special guest is Dr. Beverly Hyman. She is co-author of the book, How to Know If It's Time to Go. It's a 10-step reality test, folks, for your marriage. And let me also mention that she is co-author with Lawrence Birnbach. Dr. Birnbach couldn't be with us today, but we're so happy to have Dr. Hyman on the air with us. Hey, Beverly, how are you?
I'm fine. Happy to be here with you, Dr. Michelle.
Well, it's lovely to have you. And this book is really wonderful. It's a comfortable read, but it really lays out a lot of information to people, for me, I saw, who may be experiencing a lot of difficulty in their partnerships, marriages, whatever, and really need to make a decision on, should I leave this, and what would be the best thing for the kids, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a great book. Let me also mention, by the way, that Dr. Hyman has a PhD in communications. She is an executive coaching expert. She works with families and career issues. And also she works with the United Nations as a spokesperson, also as a communicator to help women and also families as well. So, you know, she's got a lot of wonderful credentials, and this book was really thought out very well and planned, and she knows her stuff, so... I'd like to jump into how to help people know if it's time to go. And it doesn't sound that positive, I know, Bev, but there are times that we really need to make a determination. You talk about 9 areas in a marriage in which couples should try and have a mutually acceptable understanding. What are those really important issues, Bev?
Well, you know, everybody has arguments sometime. I don't think you can be in a partnership with anybody without having ruffling their feathers and them ruffling yours on occasion. But there are 9 areas that all couples have to face up to. And most importantly, they have to come to resolutions in those areas where they just they're at loggerheads with one another.
Right.
I think it's probably pretty predictable that money is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's probably front and center.
Yep.
Sex, what's our sex life going to be like? The level of frequency, the level of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do about religion? Mine, yours, ours, none, some?
Yeah.
How are we raising our children? Tough, tender? what are our relationships going to be like with our extended family? How, I mean, are we giving your mom a key to the house, or does she have to make a telephone call before she decides to drop by? What about the gender roles? Just because I'm the woman, do I do all the house cleaning? Because you're the guy, do you always drive the car? Mm. How are we going to spend our leisure time? What about substance use and substance abuse? Can I tolerate you after you've had a bottle of wine? Mm. Or is that way too much? And how do we feel about each other's career and job behavior? Are you just a little too laid back, and as a result, we're slipping into less than the lifestyle that we had planned? Or do you work day and night and I never get to see your face? So while those are all the nine areas, most couples are pretty in touch with one another during their courting phase to know that they are in sync in most of them. What happens with couples who start getting into trouble is that there are two or three areas that become really persistent problems. Mm-hmm. And if we are always fighting about money and right. we can't come to any decision about how we're going to deal with our extended family,
yeah.
these become really pernicious and eat away at the fabric of the marriage.
Mm. Boy, is that true, Beverly. Do you think that a lot of people then in the courting stage, as you were talking about, before everybody settles down and starts to sort of act like who they really are, do you think in the courting stage we're all on good behavior? So if someone sees possibly an issue with someone who their partner who, you know, doesn't know how to save money or has spending issues or career issues or there's some religious
gambling
differences.
Right, gambling issues, exactly.
And
I think that everybody is intentionally and not in any hostile way, in a meaningful way, on their best behavior when they first fall in love or in lust.
Right.
We all right, and I think that for each one of us, we believe that we will be better. We will try harder. Maybe I've got some serious problems around the way I deal with money, and you can't let me loose with a credit card. But you know what? When I'm married, life's going to be right. I'm going to feel better, and I'm not going to do that anymore.
Right.
And so I'm not just lying to you. I'm lying to myself. Or to me, the biggest problem is, I love you and I think that I'm going to make you change.
Mm.
I think that with my help, I'm going to give you so much support, you're going to change. And you, of course, as a psychologist, know that change is very hard to come by. Deep-seated,
right.
you know, deep personality issues are very hard to change.
Right.
Even with love in your life.
Boy, is that true. That's so difficult. Do you think more women think they can change men before going into more serious relationships? Or do you think it's more of a female characteristic? I'm going to be able to change.
Oh, them. I love that. I love that question. You know, I have absolutely never run a study on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nor read a study on it. But as a woman, I would say yeah.
Yeah.
We women do tend to feel that, you know, we'll organize things, we'll fix things up on the outside, we'll make it work. I think that we do. I think that that we do believe that we can help people to change.
Right.
And sometimes we can. I don't want to sound like a pessimist.
No.
I think love is really healing, really
yes.
healing to people.
It is.
But I also think that, as I said, change is real hard to come by.
Mm, I agree. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle here and my special guest, Dr. Beverly Hyman. She is co-author of the book, which is a great read, by the way. It's called How to Know If It's Time to Go. It's a 10-step reality test for your marriage. If you have any questions about a relationship you're in, are you considering maybe marrying someone, or are you in a marriage and you're having second thoughts about, oh my goodness, there's too many issues here, I should have sorted out, this is the book to read. Lawrence Birnbach is also the co-author of this book. He couldn't be here with us today, but we're also taking your questions if you have any. I'm going to go online and take your questions on my email address because I'd like to get through some of this information with Bev, and then you can give us a call live on the air here. So if you have any questions for Beverly, you can email me at docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. Any immediate questions. And if you do call in live, I'll be putting your calls on hold because I do want to get a little bit through this information so we can kind of steer you where the book's going and help you out with your issues. And that number here live is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. So getting back to this good stuff, Bev, we have, you know, the major differences, which we really try to have more similar, which can make for a better relationship. Now, what are some of the questions that you suggest people ask about their relationship to figure out whether they're in a troubled marriage or not?
I think something that's incredibly important is, how long have you been asking yourself these questions? Mm. How long have you been unhappy? Mm-hmm. If it's going through a rough patch, and of course, with a bad economic environment like we're in right now, mm-hmm. the kinds of ups and downs that relationships go through, every marriage, as I said earlier, has rough patches. But I think that if you're finding that it's getting to be year in and mm-hmm. year out, and that nothing changes, that those areas that are persistent disagreement never get any better. In fact, if anything, they get worse. Both people are locked in into hardened positions. Nothing ever gets resolved. The same arguments happen over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So that you could almost write the script for them.
Yes.
Those are real signals of troubled marriages. Mm-hmm. I see also, we interviewed over 100 people for this book, and one of the things that astonished me mm-hmm. about people who are either divorced or in marriages that are very unhappy is that they have no empathy for one another.
Right.
There's no tenderness, not a shred. The most awful things happen to your mate,
right.
and instead of compassion or empathy,
yeah.
you know, it's, I told you so, you're a jerk. That's why these things happen to you. People in bad marriages don't care not only about the big things, they don't even care about helping one another out in the little things.
Oh,
so
right.
that, you know, if I go to the store and I know what kind of cookies you like or what kind of lettuce you like,
right.
I don't buy it for you.
Right.
These kinds of things are happening. Then worse things start happening.
Mm-hmm.
You see loyalties shifting
mm-hmm.
and your best friend, or perhaps even more dangerous, you know, an office mate of the opposite sex becomes someone who you're sharing, you know, intimacies with. I don't mean sexual intimacies, but you're opening your heart to. You're pouring out your troubles to.
Right.
Disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
Often this starts creeping in front of the kids, but even behind closed doors. Real disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that we noticed is how much other couples don't like to be in friendships and relationships with couples who are in a troubled marriage. Part of it is hanging out with people who persistently show disrespect to one another and the discomfort that
they
do that to one another.
Isn't that uncomfortable? You go out to dinner with a couple and they don't know how to talk to each other respectfully, or there's underlying tension going on and you're like, oh, I want to get out of here.
Exactly. Is this fun? It's so stressful.
Right.
I want to get out of here.
Right.
And it's embarrassing. It's humiliating to the partner who's being disrespected. And
mm-hmm.
usually these are friends of yours and, you know, you feel awful about it.
Yeah.
You see it in your kids. Oftentimes when a marriage is going awry, mm-hmm. kids start acting out. They act mm-hmm. out at home, or when things really get bad, they act out in school mm-hmm. As well. I mean, I'm not saying the obvious that your sex life falls apart. And,
right. Yeah, it's true, though. I mean, you start
avoiding each other at every cost,
yes.
Avoiding each other, not just in the bedroom, but avoiding each other so that, you know, one of you works late at night, whether in the den at home or stays in the office late,
right.
or, you know, you take one kid to Little League and I take the other kid to soccer.
Right.
So we don't have to even stay with each other during the weekend.
Mm. Right. That's
sad. A picture of a marriage that's unhappy.
Oh, boy, is that ever. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, my special guest is Dr. Beverly Hyman. She's a co-author of the book, How to Know If It's Time to Go. It's a 10-step reality test for your marriage. And, you know, Bev, in your book, you say you have the right to expect some things from your marriage that you cannot get or should not seek outside of it. So you and co-author Dr. Birnbach have proposed that folks measure their marriage against their Marriage Bill of Rights. So can you, I know there are 10 of them, but can you kind of discuss, they're all important, but some of the most important of those Bill of Rights that you talk about?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that, because the Marriage Bill of Rights to me is so much at the heart of the book, because the book isn't a book about how to get a divorce.
Yeah.
The book is a book, right, to figure out whether we can work on our marriage,
right.
make it a good marriage, or whether this marriage is over.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bill of Rights is a huge help in that. I'll touch on some of the rights that are the most meaningful to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Bill of Rights talks about companionship, that mm-hmm. when you're married to someone, you have the right to expect some of their companionship,
mm-hmm.
that when you married one another, it was to create a social partnership as well as an economic and parenting partnership. And lots of people forget that we came together because we enjoyed one another's company.
Mm-hmm.
You have the right to respect. If you can't get respect from the person that you are most tied to in the universe,
mm-hmm.
who can you get respect from?
Right.
And if your partner treats you with disrespect, then it's almost an invitation for your children to become disrespectful towards you, your families, others. You owe your partner, and you deserve respect.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty.
Yes.
Loyalty. If you can't get loyalty from the person that you have committed to financially, legally, and in every way,
mm-hmm.
If they feel that they owe their loyalty to a parent, to a sibling, rather than to you, this is not the basis
mm-hmm.
For a marriage. One that's incredibly important to me is affection. You know, if every human being needs affection, and not just a tender word, but a tender touch. I remember when my father-in-law was widowed many years and he was in his late 80s, he said to me, you know, I really miss being hugged.
Aww.
And I gave him lots of hugs.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know, human beings need touch. Mm-hmm. We need affection.
Mm.
And if you're not getting that in your marriage, where should you get it?
Right.
You need to get this. And as I said, there are 10 of them, but I'll mention just one more.
Yeah.
And that is freedom.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people that both men and women And certainly we know in many cultures that for women in particular, and in subcultures, that somehow once you are married, it's as if you have resigned your human rights as a free human being,
right,
to make some decisions, to have access to some money, to live life as a full-fledged adult.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to work out, what are the realities around freedom that we each will be comfortable with? And also, where do we draw the line,
right,
about one another's freedom? Freedom is an important and an imperative commodity in a marital relationship, and one where both partners have to feel comfortable with the level of freedom. So that's just five of the 10 Bill of Rights.
Well, those are biggies, though, Bev. I mean, those are most important as well in my mind. You know, talking about affection, it's interesting, and I know you've experienced this as well, but when I have couples coming in for therapy, it's really fascinating to see how they literally sit on my couch in my office. Sometimes they'll be completely apart. One person will be sitting on the very far left and the other on the very far right, and they'll have their legs crossed and their arms crossed, and that's, of course, evidence of problems, big problems. Other couples will come in, sit next to each other, put their arms around each other, hold hands, and I think, well, maybe they're not in as bad shape because they are exhibiting this affection and it's not even thought about. You know, they just sort of sit together and cuddle together, so they just need to work out a few issues, but you know, that is a biggie. You know, that really is. Let's talk about sexual issues. I think it's really important to bring these things up because this is a big problem that I see with a lot of people. Everybody has different ideas about what they want or what's going to satisfy them, or I'm not in the mood and, oh my gosh, I need some kind of relief. What are some of the mm-hmm. common issues with sex that you see in troubled marriages?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sex is a really major problem in all too many marriages. Mm-hmm. First of all, we see, you know, avoidance, and it's not withdrawal, and it's not just the active avoidance. You know, the person who says, "Oh, I'm too tired," or "Oh, I have to stay late in the office," or "You know, I must get a good night's sleep. I'm too busy."
Mm-hmm.
But there's other ways of avoidance as well. The people who gain huge amounts of weight.
Oh.
And have put layers and layers and layers between themselves and their partner,
sure.
and make themselves as unattractive and therefore unavailable as possible. There are obviously people with sexual difficulties. Often those can be related to health considerations. But I think that when we see the huge use of Viagra and
right.
other kinds of medications,
mm-hmm.
what we're seeing is marriages that are really having a hard time operating on their own steam. I mean, when we're talking about, you know, 35 and 40 year old men and women
right.
who it's not just recreational. It's just so much lack of intimacy. And I think, you know, we see using the kids as a way of avoiding sexual intimacy,
sure.
Keeping the kids in the bedroom. I know way too many marriages where children, even though there's adequate space for them elsewhere
mm-hmm.
in the home or the apartment, wind up sleeping either in the bed with the parents or in the crib next to the parents. People need time. They need inclination, and they need opportunity mm. in order to nurture their sex life. And we see over and over again that if you don't have an effective sex life with your mate, it doesn't take that much
mm-hmm.
to stimulate one outside the marriage.
Yeah.
We have a rule.
Mm-hmm.
the 75% rule.
Mm-hmm.
And the 75% rule seems to work very well in happy marriages. Everybody is allowed to have an off day or night about sex. But when your partner indicates that they're interested in you sexually, 75% of the time, if you want to have a happy marriage, say yes.
Yes.
Say yes. And even if you're not that moment in the mood where there's love, you get in the mood very, very quickly, very amazingly quickly. But the 75% rule seems to work really well, and it works both ways, for men and for women. Instead of ducking and dodging, because the more you duck and the more you dodge, the farther the two of you get away from each other. And ultimately, you create so much distance, it's awful hard to get back across that big big divide.
It's so true. It's so true. Had a couple short while ago who were having, you know, sexual issues. And we recently revisited that. And I said, how is it going? How's your sex life? The husband looked at me and he said, my wife got the book 50 Shades of Grey, and it's just fine, thank you. Not to plug another book, but I thought it was pretty funny, actually. So
I think it's great. Yeah. I think whatever makes it work for an individual couple that doesn't offend one or the other of them, go for it.
That's right. Exactly, Bev. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, my special guest today is Dr. Beverly Hyman. She is the co-author with Dr. Lawrence Birnbach of How to Know If It's Time to Go. It's a 10-step reality test for your marriage. Now, Bev is not advocating divorce. She's not saying, we have to really, you know, focus on getting away from this person. No, she's helping people define what they need to know if this is a real damaging situation you're in, and possibly help you think about the possibilities. And you also talk about some myths about divorce, Bev, and as well some truths. So maybe you can share some of the myths that people have about divorce with us.
Well, ask anyone who is contemplating divorce or is afraid that someone in their family is contemplating divorce. Mm-hmm. And things that come tumbling right out, really heartfelt fears, are things like, particularly women, but both men and women say, oh my gosh, if I leave this marriage, I'll never have another relationship again. You know, I'm 41 years old and I'm going to hang up my gloves. I'll never have love again.
Right.
Well, that is an absolute myth. You really have to hide in a closet or a cellar not to get married again in this country.
Right.
83% of men who divorce remarry, and 75% of women who divorce remarry. And that statistic does not include people who decide to live with another partner, you know, and not with the benefit of marriage.
Right.
So it's really higher. I mean, as I said, there's rarely a chance that you will not be in another relationship. You don't need to worry about that.
Right.
Most people, no matter how long they've been unhappy, they keep saying to themselves, you know, if I were ready for a divorce, I'd feel 100% certain.
Right.
I would know it.
Right.
And you as a psychologist know that there's nothing in life that we don't feel a little ambivalent about.
Sure.
And of course, it's impossible. None of us can read the future. So, of course, you're going to have mixed feelings. And why wouldn't you have mixed feelings about taking such a huge decision into your hands, right?
Sure,
So people say, I feel positive. No, you're not. You'll never feel positive. No one, unless someone is, you know, dangerously abusive, dangerous, heaven forbid, to your children, you'll never feel 100% certain. You'll always have some ambivalence. After all, you came to marry this person.
Right.
A lot of people are afraid that someone else will want him or someone else will want her. And then, you know, act in haste, repent at leisure. I'll see my ex-spouse and he'll be really happily married to someone else. Well, you know what? There's a chance that that's possible.
Yeah.
It's not likely unless he and probably you are going to get some help and figure out what went wrong in the marriage. A lot of people are afraid that they will make the same mistake again.
Yes, exactly.
And you know what?
Yep.
They should be.
They should be. You got that right, Bev.
They should be.
You really are right on that one.
Right. Bev, that isn't a myth. Of course, if you get some good counseling, if you're able to take some responsibility for what went wrong in the marriage.
Yes.
Another myth is I'll be poor.
Yes.
Most people think that the economic consequences of a divorce will be permanently devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing in U.S. Census data to support that. Are there some economic consequences of marriage?
Right,
absolutely.
Right. Sure.
But they are in the short term.
Okay.
Within 5 years, both men and women recover, if not to exactly their former financial, numbers, to the same standard of living that they enjoyed prior to their divorce.
Wow.
A lot of people worry about the impact of divorce on their children, and of course, we all should. They're afraid that their children will abandon them. They're afraid that their children will not want to marry, will be so frightened by their own parents' divorce and injured by it. Of course, the children of divorced parents marry in the same numbers and with the same frequency as everybody else. They divorce with the same numbers and the same frequency as everyone else.
Right.
And what we find with children is you must weigh the damage that's being done to children during an intensely conflictual and unhappy marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Again, because the choice for children is not either living in a happy marriage that's intact or having your parents divorce. Happy marriages don't break up. The choice with children is, which is better, living in a marriage that's dead, in which the parents are disrespectful, in which there's either outward open conflict or just behind the scenes conflict.
Right.
And that's what's damaging. That's what's damaging
to
children.
That is so true. And, you know, they say after there is a divorce, you know, the children are better off actually than to have, you know, constant exposure to the drama and the screaming and the yelling and the fighting and the passive aggressive behaviors. And children actually do better when they're away from that on a daily basis.
Yes.
You know?
And I think that the really awful thing is when the divorce doesn't end that trauma, when the parents carry the same, you know, disgust for one another, hatred, tearing one another apart.
Right.
I don't know that there's anything that's more destructive to children's well-being.
Yes.
And also, you know what, to adults' well-being. I mean, living in that kind of tension and conflict is... It's deadly. It's deadly, and it has consequences right down to real health consequences for each of the people involved.
Right. Exactly, Bev. Could you answer an email we just received asking you a question about his marriage? Would that be great?
Sure.
Somebody just wrote me on docmichelle@AOL.com here, and... it's from Darren. He said, Dear Beverly, I'm a 45-year-old healthy male. My wife of 10 years has not responded to wanting to have sex with me for about 6 months. The problem is I have become attracted to another single woman in my office. Oh, boy. I'm having fantasies about having sex with her. Should I tell my wife to shock her into realizing what her pushing me away is doing? Oh, boy.
I think it's I'm going to answer the question, but I want to step back a few months, and that 6 months is a very long time for such a for any couple,
sure.
any couple at all,
exactly.
but especially a young couple like this one,
yeah.
to not be intimate with one another. And there needs to have been a lot of talking about what's going on up until now. Why mm-hmm. why are we waiting?
Yes. What,
the longer, and you know, because you see couples, that the biggest complaint that psychologists and couples therapists make is, why did this couple wait so long?
Exactly.
They wait for the alienation to set in so long. So number one, I say, I'm glad he's called in. I'm glad he's worrying about this. He should be. But he should definitely have started talking with his wife 5.5 months ago.
Right.
My gut feeling is, it is important to shock the other.
Mm-hmm.
It is important to say, let's get this out in the open.
Right.
We can't live like this. I haven't acted on this. It's normal to have fantasies. I'm having fantasies and I don't like it.
Right.
You're my wife. I love you. I want to be with you.
Right.
We have to deal with this. What am I doing to push you away? We talk a lot in the book about how issues in a marriage are never one way. I mean, even the way he's asking the question, it really sounds as if he thinks it's all her problem.
Right.
It's never all her problem.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's
100%, 100%.
That's right.
So something that he did or is doing, has done, is alienating his wife,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't know what it is, and it's his job to find out what it is, as much as it is her job to speak up about it and to start sharing with him so that they can swim their way to a better place.
Boy, that's a great answer, and I thank you so much for having the courage to email us that question, Darren, and take what Dr. Hyman said to heart and do so. Try to work it out. It sounds like you want to work it out, and do not take action with the single woman in your office. Really, go to a marriage counselor of some kind, and like Bev said, be honest with your wife about what's going on. Speaking about being honest, Beverly, you say that in order to stay happy enough in a relationship, each spouse has to be willing to make changes. What are some of the healthy discussions that you suggest that couples have with each other to keep from divorcing?
I think that they need to number one, they look at themselves as well as look at the other. You know, if you approach the other person with a roster of here's everything that's wrong with you that I want you to fix, I think it's a recipe for more alienation, not for more affection. So we in the book talk about how you approach these open conversations, because you can also kill someone with candor and honesty, right?
Right, sure.
So talking about, you know, what is it that I'm doing that's contributing to some of these problems that we're having, to your withdrawing from me,
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, you've withdrawn, you've taken yourself away from me, versus what have I done,
right,
to hurt you and to make you withdraw? Looking at it as, you know, joint mutual problem solving, not here's how we're going to fix your problem. But it's hearing about what the other person cares about.
Right.
What they care about also positively that maybe we could do more of together.
Right.
Not just the negative. Not mm-hmm. just the negative. But, you know, you remember when we took that walk together? You know, I really love that. Why can't I ever get you away from the, you know, the football game?
Right. Right. Exactly.
Can we offering something positive, as well as, again, you know, not just focusing on the negative.
Exactly.
We are having the book. a marriage test.
Oh, yes.
It's actually 100 questions, and it's very much tied into the 9 areas that all couples have to find commonality in.
Right, right.
And it's a great way. A lot of couples have told us, couples in happy marriages as well as distressed marriages, have told us that taking the marriage test individually and then talking about some of their answers with one another made a great car ride and a great conversation.
Right. I think it's a wonderful test. It really, you say it's not empirical necessarily, but the questions that you have couples ask themselves and try to truthfully answer, they are really extremely relevant when it comes to working out your problems in a marriage. And I've used a lot of those types of questions in my couples counseling as well. It's really important. So
so that also can be a way to start a dialogue, well, what are your answer to that?
Right.
Or that one really, I had problems with that one. Did you feel the same way?
Right.
Which area came out to be the area of our greatest differences, or which areas came out to be the areas of our greatest strength?
Right.
And was it the same for you? Are we living in the same marriage?
Or are
we experiencing two different marriages?
Oh, exactly. Well said. Well, listen, Beverly, I wish we had more time here, but it is about that time to scoot on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. But I really urge listeners to check out Bev's book. It's How to Know If It's Time to Go, a 10-step reality test for your marriage. Dr. Hyman is also co-author with Lawrence Birnbach. Dr. Lawrence Birnbach, I want to mention that. He couldn't make it on the air with us today. Bev, what's the best way to get a hold of your book and learn more about you?
It's available on Amazon.com. It's also available at all Barnes & Noble bookstores and on BarnesandNoble.com.
Great.
And also through our website, How to Know If It's Time to Go.
Yes.
.com.
And by the way, you got it. Thank you so much, Bev. This will be up on the LA Talk Radio homepage and also on my radio page here so folks can download or replay it tomorrow afternoon. So, reruns.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dr. Michelle.
Oh.
I really appreciate it. I hope you can tell how passionate I am about the subject.
Boy.
What could be more comforting than a good marriage?
Boy,
nothing.
Is that true.
Nothing in life.
You are so right, Beverly. Thank you so much, Beverly, for being on the show. I appreciate always talking with you.
Thank you.
Take good care now. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Again, Dr. Beverly Hyman, author of How to Know If It's Time to Go, a 10-step reality test for your marriage. A wonderful book to help you with your issues, dealing with marriage problems. Kind of clear up some things, help you learn how to use proper language as well. It's not advocating divorce. It's not saying, get divorced, boy. Any little sign. There's a lot of great information to help you square your head out, though, in it. Okay, I just wanted to mention this before we get going. We have CBS News coming up. Have a little time here. I've been receiving quite a few emails from listeners who've been asking me what I think about the 24-year-old James Holmes, who was accused of killing 12 theatergoers and wounding 58 at the midnight screening of The Dark Knight Rises last Friday. Of course, the media is lavishing attention on his odd behavior. A lot of people have been asking me questions such as, what is the difference between antisocial personality disorder and a true psychopath? And my answer is not much. As a psychologist, I think it's important to talk about how we have to assess folks who do such horrendous crimes. And I'm not justifying it, and we don't, because they are horrendous. And those victims and their families and friends who've had to cope with this now for a week will suffer. Always. Not to mention those innocents who lost their lives. But what I will be doing last week after this fellow is arraigned is talking more about the whys. Why did it happen? Is this man mentally unstable? Yes. Did he have a psychotic break? No. And I think what's going to happen as time goes on, we're going to find out more and more information, which are showing patterns that this James Holmes is a psychopath, has had antisocial personality disorder. Just because you're in a PhD program doesn't mean that you don't have an antisocial personality disorder or have psychotic tendencies to hurt others. I'm just saying that. That's my experience. I'll share more about my thoughts, and also we're going to get more into that diary entry and that letter that James Holmes sent the psychiatrist at his university, warning him about what he was going to do. Unfortunately, it sat in a mailroom for a little while. That happens. Nonetheless, what I'll do is I'll talk more about some of the signs, and this hopefully will awaken some of the folks around them, not to be paranoid in our society, about certain signs that we have to be aware of that may indicate that someone is going to hurt someone else or kill them. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. If you have more questions for me, you can email me at docmichelle@aol.com. That's docmichelle. It's about time. You can stay on the couch if you like. More great shows coming up. Like I said, I'll be back next Friday with more great information. And I will be making commentaries about James Holmes. What's going on? Why do people do these things? As I always say, take good care of yourself first. Then you will actually be better for others. Have a great day. It's Dr. Michelle signing off. Bye-bye. Just the same.